unfortunately, my mother died in a car accident and I was 27 at the time. So because it was quite a sudden death, everything was really heightened. I was experiencing severe grief, as you can imagine, but then also the paperwork, the legals, the finances. Phrase death tick, a lot of people, oh, that's a bit inappropriate. I don't think it is inappropriate. We deal with death and dying, and that's probably the most human thing we all go through. The main thing for me was to ensure we kept that. So kept the ethos of the brand that we were here to support people with loss. That's the fundamental thing I don't want to change.
From the first-time founders to the funds that back them, innovation needs different. Our episode partner, HSBC Innovation Banking, is proud to accelerate growth for tech and life science businesses, creating meaningful connections and opening up a world of opportunity for entrepreneurs and investors alike. Discover more at www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Hello and welcome to the UKTM podcast, a weekly chat with the movers and shakers of the UK tech industry and the destination for all things UK tech related. I'm your host, Jane Wakefield, and this week I am joined by Sam Grice, founder of Octopus Legacy, a firm devoted to helping people plan their death using online tools. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jane.
Now, people that have ideas for startups often just have a light bulb moment. But in your case, it was a rather more personal and tragic reason why you set this startup up. Do you want to talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So 2016, was working in finance. I had started a company before, but it was one of those, I guess, problems I wasn't too passionate about. So I'd moved on. And so unfortunately, my mother died in a car accident and I was 27 at the time. So because it was quite a sudden death, everything was really heightened. I was experiencing severe grief, as you can imagine, but then also the paperwork, the legals, the finances. And I think that's kind of, I guess I did have a light bulb moment, but it was during that period of time. And it was basically, I guess, a way of me trying to make something good out of the situation, was thinking it'd be really lovely that there was a company that could come in and just help take all the stress away from my family. But there wasn't. There was a lot of companies that would solve an individual problem. So you can go to a solicitor to help you with the legal stuff, so you can go to a funeral director to help you with the funeral. But there was no one really to step in and take over everything holistically. And that was the formation and the start of the idea, I guess, as a company and a brand that could help people deal with losing their loved one.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, you know, it grew out of such tragic circumstances, but explain to me a little bit about what it is that you're helping people do. Because as you say, the last thing you want when you're deep in grief at losing a loved one is a load of admin.
Yeah. And so we have a unique problem, which is that we try to have conversations with people when they're alive so that when they do die, we can actually help their families with the problem you just said. So we still view ourselves as a bereavement company, a company here that is the sole purpose is to make people that have lost their loved ones a little bit easier. But what we realize is that if we can't change time. So if the person who has died is not prepared and haven't put plans in place, it's really hard for our company, or would be hard for our company, to solve those problems. If you die intestate without a will, you've died intestate. We can't change that. And so the concept we tried to develop was, I had this conversation, was basically the best thing that could have happened to me during the time after losing mum was for her to be alive one more day. I could sit down with her and ask her everything, her bank accounts, where's this, what kind of funeral she wants, what song she likes. And I can't do that. So our company transitioned into pre-planning with that concept, which is basically, well, if we can get Jane prepared and we can get you to a level that we're comfortable that when you were to die, that obviously, hopefully not any day soon, when that day does happen, we can step in and really support your family, because one, we've formed a relationship with you and we know a lot about you. And two, we've got you to the level that of preparation so that your family doesn't have to worry about that admin headache. And that's effectively what Octopus Legacy is trying to achieve, which is a two-tiered customer. We deal with the people while they're alive, and then we deal with their family after that loss.
It's a tricky one though, isn't it? Because even though making a will has been made a lot easier by online services, it's still, I don't know, is it something like only half of people die having made a will? I guess it's just because we don't like the thought of talking about death. How do you sort of overcome that obstacle?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it comes to mode of delivery. So you're right, online helps. The fact is now that option. I would say that the other processes, so more traditional services are probably need a little bit more modernization as well, which is something that Octopus Legacy is moving into. But I would say the general process of writing a will, I think, yeah, you're right, it's a probably a conversation people don't want to have. And the will itself is a little bit of a stale document. It hasn't been changed since 1830, the laws. Doing it is not an enjoyable process. And I know that sounds real weird, make a will enjoyable, but what we're trying to do at Octopus Legacy is make the process of writing will a little bit more human. And what I mean there is some of the most valuable things I've got from my mum now today is voice recordings of her, videos, photos, messages. I think she wrote, it was probably 2 years before she died, she wrote her favorite recipes in a book by hand, not knowing she was going to die, obviously. But that book, as you can probably imagine, I haven't even taken it out of the sleeve she put it in yet because I don't want to touch it. It's like a rare book. And that's incredibly valuable and important to me. And we believe that that stuff can be incorporated into planning for death. It doesn't just have to be a stale last will and testament document that's got a few things you change. It could be something a bit more. And we think if we make the conversation more human, I wouldn't say enjoyable is the right word, but a lot more something you would probably be more likely to do. And we believe that's a big point of difference that we've taken in the industry.
And actually, you know, we are increasingly living our lives online, putting ourselves out there in every kind of way imaginable, videos, photos. There's so much of us there. And yet, when we die, that feels that that's not continued. What do you think about things like social media sites memorializing pages, for example? And do you think that people need more access to their loved ones' digital lives after they've died?
So I think it's a really deep question. And I think grief and dealing with grief is a spectrum. So some people are more comfortable and some people not. I would say that generally people are resistant. So a good example is people don't like to look at photos of their loved one that has died because they trigger emotions of grief. And generally that's because grief and love are on two sides of the same coin. So the reason you're upset is because you loved that person, and seeing them can trigger those emotions. But from my experience, the more that you do engage with that content, which they have created through their life, for me, has helped the grieving process. When I see a photo of mum now, or hear her voice, or I watch her on video, it brings a smile to my face faster than tears to my eyes. And that transition took a while. And so now I can sit and watch family videos of mum, and I really love watching them. And I would say that I think it's a hesitation for emotion, but we've, like you said, we've got phones with us. You could record a message now for your loved ones. And I guarantee you, if you were to die, that video would be so important to them. Probably more important than the percentage of the estate they're going to get. Maybe you could go a little bit further and actually leave them notes and things like that. But I think everyone's on a spectrum of what they would be comfortable with.
I remember writing a few years ago about one of these companies that allowed you to look into your background using AI to bring old photographs to life. That's, I suppose, a slightly more creepy aspect of what we can achieve with new technologies. Do you think we're going to see more of that, and people kind of almost living after death in avatar form?
So I think, I guess linking to that spectrum, I would say yes, we would. And I think it would be, for some people, might be very beneficial. I think generally, and I'm not an expert here, but I would say it's better for people to come to terms with the fact that their loved one has died. And that is really important. But if I could create a hologram of my mother using AI and say her old messages so that it sounded like her, me personally, I probably would give it a go. It might be an incredibly emotional thing to do, but I would think I would be in the camp of yes. Some people might not be comfortable with that. So I think it's up to people. And what we like to do as a company is, rather than have an opinion on what's right or wrong in that space, it's that a consumer should make the decision. And that's for both the person who's planning. So whether you feel comfortable leaving voice notes, because it might be leaving a video for your children might be something. I've just had a young child, and I can imagine that sparks a lot of emotion. If you're not comfortable leaving those videos, that's fine. And then the second part of that is the person who, after you've died, they might not feel comfortable watching it or getting involved with it. And ultimately, it should be their decision, I think. And Octopus Legacy has taken a very overarching stance, which is, if that's what you feel comfortable doing and you think something you want to pass on, then you should do it.
We've also seen a growth in living funerals, this phenomenon of people actually sort of being at their own funerals and celebrating them. I mean, often for people who know that they've got a limited time left. Is that a new phenomenon, do you think, that we're going to see more of?
I think so. And I think particularly, I would say, in those who unfortunately have terminal diagnosis will know that the end is near. And I think that's liberating for both people. I think firstly, for the person who is is going to die, to come to terms with that and get everyone that they love in a room, which is hard to do. And so rather than having a, you know, one-to-one session in a house, which can be quite intense, why not have a big party? And then the flip side of that is the people attending can say what they want to say and have those conversations. And you don't have to die with that, oh, I wish I'd had that conversation. I wish I'd said that. I wish I'd done that. And that's what you hear a lot of people is after a death, it's what could have happened. And if you've got those events, I think that maybe 50 years ago, those events may have been seen morbid. I think society has changed a lot. And I think people are starting to realize, well, yeah, if I know the end is near, why not get everyone in the room and have a party or a barbecue and some drinks? I think that's probably what I would do. But yeah, I think we will get an emergence. And there was even a scenario, someone who worked with us was dying. And then on their death, their funeral was more like an art gallery exhibition. And they walked through and there was a lot of things from her life and her photos. And she thought that would be a really lovely way for her friends and family to see her off, which was to take the journey from start to finish and go through with that and photos and memories and items. And that was her funeral, very different to what you'd expect in a traditional funeral parlor, but something that everyone explained as being a really fantastic day. So I think you're going to get the emergence of both pre-death send-offs, but also reshaping of what a funeral actually is, which is remembrance of the person who's died, starting to form their legacy.
HSBC Innovation Banking, our partner for this episode, provides commercial banking services, expertise, and insights to the technology, life science and healthcare, private equity, and venture capital industries. To find out why innovation needs different, go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Our lives have changed dramatically, and technology has changed our lives dramatically, and it probably is time now for us to start thinking about continuing that use. Death tech has become a term, which is an odd term, but are we seeing a lot of companies in this space now? And what are you kind of seeing out there that has captured your eye in this whole new area of death tech?
Yeah, I think it is growing. I think when I started this journey, I could have probably named the death tech companies on both my hands. And at that time, the phrase death tech, a lot of people, oh, that's a bit inappropriate. I don't think it is inappropriate. We deal with death and dying, and that's probably the most human thing we all go through. And I think you will see a lot more companies come through. Things that take my eye is links to what you said. I think you've got the AI impacts on what legal services which was making the legal services industry more efficient and consolidating probably very distinct industries into one, which is people preparing for death. So I think as markets evolve, they move away from people thinking about products and people start to think about problems. And for us, that problem is either dying, getting prepared for death or dealing with that loss. But then you also see things, there's a company at the moment that is doing QR codes they put on gravestones. When you scan that QR code, it shows the last video of that person and in their daily life, whether that's dancing at a wedding or walking down the beach with their loved one. And I think that's lovely. It's rather than, you know, who lies here, Sam Grice and my birth date, why not have a little a little QR code, maybe a link to this podcast. why not? And that stuff I think will emerge. And technology, it's so easy to do that right now. It's not even a stretch anymore. And I think that's quite cool. If grave sites could become a bit of a gallery of when you walk through, I'd love to, if I could take a QR code of William Shakespeare's gravestone and he spoke to us about his life, I would find that fascinating rather than morbid.
I do like that idea, actually. Graveyards are pretty depressing places, aren't they? And if we can do anything to make them a little bit more modern, I think that would be a great idea. Now, let's talk about your company specifically a bit now, because this you had a name change. You founded this company as Guardian Angel. So talk me through what happened when you were acquired by Octopus Group in 2022. And you know, obviously, lots of people listening to this podcast will be people that are founders and are on that journey. What's it like having being taken over by a big company like that?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So the first thing is we weren't looking for it, which helps. And so we were raising, as you probably know, and most of the listeners know, 2022 was the year where it was starting to get a bit wobbly. But we had a decent, I think at that stage it was called an early series A. I can't remember what we call it now, but it was something like that. All the names changed in the space. But we were raising around. I think we had several million committed. It was going quite well. And then as part of that raising journey, I met Octopus. They're a large investor in the UK. I've got a big venture division. And on that call, the founder, one of the founders of Octopus, joined Simon, and he asked a lot of customer-based questions, which was very odd. So rather than my finances and profit, he was asking me about the customer in the death space. What are they thinking? What do you think people are doing? How do you think incumbents treat those people? All those types of questions, which I thought was quite an interesting conversation. And then after that call, he called me up and explained that he'd just lost his father, and he's quite young himself, and he had just gone through everything I was explaining. And to the point I said at the start of the podcast, wouldn't it be great if you could go to one central brand and one company? And his explanation to me was basically like, that is fantastic and it would be great, but you're going to need a lot of money to do that and a lot of time. It's patient capital. You're not going to be able to achieve a lot of this in 18-month investment cycles. So join Octopus Group and we'll support you to get to that vision. And yeah, so I decided to do that. Took selling is that's probably another podcast. It's similar to fundraising, but probably a little bit more scrutiny on everything because obviously they're acquiring it. But Octopus were great through the whole process. And then the first 6 months following acquisition was focused on us settling in, how it works, how you know, we don't have to raise capital anymore. So how does that all work? And it was kind of navigating the chaos after the acquisition. And then the next 6 months was a reshift in our strategy, including do we want to take on the Octopus name or not? And it was a hard decision for me. I really liked Guardian Angel. I don't know if you know the story, but it was originally named during that chaotic time after my mum's death. Our family was very distraught, and my aunties, who had been exposed to quite a bit of death, unfortunately, stepped up and they helped with everything. This is how you find your funeral director. This is what you need to do. Don't worry about contacting the lawyer now. They can wait until next week, all that type of thing. And then at the funeral, my dad said they'd been like his guardian angels. And that was what I was trying to replicate. It was basically, can I recreate my artists at scale across the UK or across New Zealand at the time? And could I recreate that as a brand? And then so the main thing for me was to ensure we kept that. So kept the ethos of the brand, that we were here to support people with loss. That's the fundamental thing I don't want to change. And then so it came to, do we think we'll gain more or less by taking on that Octopus name? And luckily, Octopus is a loved brand and the household name. One in three people in the UK use them for energy, and they have a fantastic NPS score. So for us, it was a series of decisions that led to the outcome of let's rename to an Octopus. And then there was a lot more debate on what comes after the Octopus, which obviously has become legacy, which you can probably tell why. A lot of what I believe will help with this space is making death more human and helping people form a legacy and whatever that means. And that's going to change person to person, but ultimately we should be a brand that allows people to leave that legacy the way they want. Even if it's a QR code on your gravesite.
How has that gone down with customers, though? Because, as you say, Guardian Angel has a ring to it, doesn't it? And I immediately understand what that means. I'm not sure Octopus Legacy has quite the same ring to it. Are customers kind of adapting to that? Has it affected how your brand looks? Because obviously the brand is a really important thing for you guys.
Yes, and I think it's a really hard answer to know. I think what we now find is for our existing customers that obviously bought into the brand and my story, were obviously loyal to Guardian Angel, but they've all stayed, most of them have stayed with us, which is a good thing. My story remains present on the website. So what I didn't want it to become is a faceless corporate. So I'm still on emails, I'm still on the website. The reason we found it is still there. But now you think in a larger stretch, so we've got some large clients we work with, like for example, Macmillan, we've got instant brand recognition. So yes, Guardian Angel has nice connotations to it, but ultimately, Octopus is known more, so we can cut through that trust barrier. So and when you're preparing for death, especially writing will, taking out life insurance, whatever you decide to do, because you're not going to be here, you're trusting the partner you pick to deal with your loved ones. So it's actually probably what's causing only 50% of people have that will is the trust barrier. And we believe Octopus has a trusted brand, and they do. And especially what Energy has done and the group, Octopus Group is fantastic at building these disruptive brands. And that trust barrier has helped. So we've got that immediate trust, but we can't take that for granted. We've got to ensure that we use that instant trust to build products that people should trust and be proud of, both as a company, but also the people that have created them.
And you mentioned, obviously, the big advantage is that you now have access to lots more money. So what are you spending that money on? And what does the sort of future of the company look like?
Yeah, I think a lot of the industry split, like lots of industries, financial services, most tech industries really, is that you had your incumbents that were non-technical and your disruptor companies that came in with full technical solutions, start to finish online, not speaking to anyone. And what we started to realize is that death And a lot of financial services is there's a bit of a middle ground. Actually, if I'm going to trust someone with my life insurance policy that's going to pay out in case I die, I might want to speak to someone on the phone and just check that, you know, I've made the right decisions through the process. And so what we're spending the money on is developing the technology, but I would say from a tech enablement perspective. So when we were venture backed, it was all about growth and scalability. Can this roll out to 100,000 people tomorrow? If we put yes, now what we're doing is allowing us to scale, but have that human to human contact if people require it. So if they're wanting to speak to a solicitor, we've got a solicitor in the team. If they're wanting to speak to someone about life insurance, that we will have someone in the team. And so it's a matter of just building a tech enabled business, which I believe in professional services, financial services, legal services is probably where the middle ground will lie, rather than a full digital tech solution, which might be trusted by a part of society, but I would say the majority of people, when they're taking something this serious, they want to speak to someone. And so we've been spending money becoming a more modernized version of a law firm and estate planning firm, which would be highly tech enabled, but still having human to human contact.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it feels that for a lot of industries now, the human is being taken out of the equation and it's all about AI. Does AI play a role in what you offer?
I think so, because a lot of our industry is quite repetitive. And I think there's an important time when someone wants advice and they want someone to come in. I believe you're right, but I think a lot, if you look at a lot of the fintechs over the last 5 to 10 years, taking humans completely out of the process may have not worked. And so I think you will get a little shift back. And so what I think AI will do is the assumption probably was originally it's a non-scalable process. So if you replace it with technology, it's super scalable. If you strip back the first principles, which you always should when you're looking at something, maybe the problem was that the systems those people used were not scalable. And so one person could deal with 50 clients. With AI, maybe one person could deal with 500 clients. And then suddenly you actually can create the best of both worlds. And so we believe AI fits in there, is that making a process that should be efficient or instant. And if it's instant, then you can deal with more people. And Octopus Energy has done a great job with customer service on that. And a lot of Octopus Group has as well. So I believe that's where we think AI will come in, is making the customer service phenomenal at a scalable level, which is challenging, but AI helps a lot.
Now, you've talked a lot about customers and humans. So let's finish with a couple of tales from how customers have used your service. Paint me a picture of some of the innovative ways that people have used Octopus Legacy.
Yeah, so we've seen all sorts. There's a customer I always I should probably get him on one of these podcasts. But I think what we love to see is people lean into that legacy and lean into doing things a little bit differently, like I discussed at the start. And one user in particular, he wanted when he was to die, he wanted his ashes to be blended with molten cheese, formed into a cannonball and fired out of a cannonball while someone played, I can't remember the song, but on the bagpipes over the Thames. And obviously that's very unlikely. So he then followed that by saying, if that's not possible, mix my ashes with molten cheese and pour it down the toilet while you play that on Spotify. And so I think we really love seeing people that are trying to make death a little bit less. And I think for that family, I'm assuming that's personality shining. And I can only imagine them reading that will and how enjoyable that would have been for them to read and how funny that will be for them to read. And then we get the other end of the thing, which I think is more an emotional thing for me, is we had someone come to us not long ago, and they unfortunately had got diagnosed with quite severe brain tumor. They needed to operate effectively immediately. It's very, very urgent. And they came to us, I don't know, I've got no plans in place. What do I do? And my team is where my team is great. You know, it's not just me building this business. It's a whole team of people worked over the weekend to ensure he had a will the way he wanted, ready for before the operation on the Tuesday, I think it was. And just how ecstatic he was with that, but how much stress I can imagine that was building up on him, what would happen. And he had, every family has got complexities, and it was a matter of navigating that with them in a really short period of time. And I think that's lovely, is that we can be a brand that allows people to write about firing ashes out of a cannon right through to someone who's at probably one of the worst times they're going through in their life. And they don't care about their will. They care about looking after their loved ones. And we can step in and just ensure that they've got something that they really need in a timely matter. That's what gets me up in the morning. I think that part of it as well.
And finally, what do you think you can do in terms of breaking down the barriers? I mean, you've listed some really fun stories there and fun ways people could use the service and start planning it. But still, there's a fundamental problem with people talking about death, especially in a time now where we're expecting to live longer than ever. You know, so what is it? One in every two people born now may live to be 100. Is it becoming easier, do you think, to talk about death in the modern digitized world, or is it actually becoming more difficult because we don't want to think about our mortality at all in the modern world?
So I think it's a good question. A lot of people talk about the taboo in the industry. And my experience over 5 years is that when I speak to people and I use those stories and those examples, the conversation is quite easy to have. I don't find it too taboo driven. I don't find, oh, this is a bit inappropriate. And actually what normally happens is a story follows. So I explain a story like that and they say, it's funny, my uncle did that or my auntie did this. And you start to have an open conversation about death and dying. So I think it's more starting a conversation is needed rather than the conversation's not happening because there's resistance. And I think the problem being, if you lead with a will as a way to start a conversation, it's quite a hard conversation to start. If you think about getting a family around a table to discuss a will and testament, seems not, but sitting around and playing a game about legacy and how you could be remembered and then maybe how you want your funeral to be, I think once those conversations start, people will realize that actually this isn't that weird to talk about. I mean, I talk about, obviously I'm a little bit different, but I talk about death every day. But I talk about death with my family and I encourage my family to tell me what kind of funerals they want, what songs they want. And I mean, on our email signatures, for example, we have our funeral songs. And so whenever we send a message to anyone, whether that's a client or a company we're trying to work with, all of our team have their funeral songs listed. And you'd be surprised at how many times people respond with their funeral songs. And I think that shows that the conversation is ready to start. It's just someone and a brand needs to lead that. And we think it will be legacy.
I have got that far. I have thought about my funeral song. I haven't decided whether I want to be fired out of a cannonball. How about you? What's your, beyond the funeral song, have you got any weird and wacky things you want for your own funeral?
Not really. I'm a New Zealander living in England. So I would say my funeral is something that reminds me the most of home, which is a barbecue on the beach with my friends and family. That might be day dependent in the UK, but I think that is the funeral I would want, is people to sit around. I wouldn't want it in an event. I'd want it outdoors. I love the outdoors, around a beach, having cold beers and some food on the barbecue, listening to probably 1980s music on Spotify. So for me, that's a day that I would want. And I think my family would enjoy doing that for me. And I think that's how I would prefer to have it, rather than a traditional funeral where you bring in the casket and you have that. I would rather just, this is for Sam and this is a day to remember him, would be what I want.
Sounds perfect to me. That's all we have time for, though, I'm afraid, on this week's edition of the UKTM podcast. Thank you, Sam, for talking me through that. Really fascinating conversation. And of course, thank you to anyone listening. We will be back with another episode next week. But in the meantime, you can keep up to date with all the latest UK tech developments at www.uktech.news. Don't forget to follow UKTN on LinkedIn and X, where you can also get in touch with me with your comments and suggestions about the show. Until next time. Goodbye from me. This podcast is brought to you by HSBC Innovation Banking, the power behind the UK's forward thinkers, future makers, and leap takers. They're helping to ignite the bold ideas that reshape our world. Go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb to find out how innovation needs different. We'll be right back.